couple more Freddy Kruegers. Couple from the text line.
People in this area have tortured sports memories. I am shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Couple from the text line. Couple from our own brains. Brad Marchand, top of mind from the four of us this morning.
Yes.
Of course, he's part of the Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara mold, but also he's...
You could take it from the other two. And it's not that Marchand is any less well, I mean, he's like slightly less, I think, a great player than those two, but it's not to quibble with how great he is. But it's like those two, especially Bergeron, he has this almost like, that's prime ministerial or presidential like vibe about him. It's like, I respect this guy so much. It doesn't mean I like
him,
but
he's terrorizing you with a smile on his face. Nice guy. You respect the hell out of him. You love him. You honestly love Patrice Bergeron, even though he's killing you. But Brad Marchand is licking you, and that's probably the difference between the two. So him licking Leo Komarov certainly is something that will exist in the, deep in the brain, deep in the subconscious of people trying to forget. Tom Brady, for me, that's a personal one. I know it's the opposite for you. But just watching him Super Bowl after Super Bowl, winning all the time, watching Patriots fans again, looking hunky. And yet I can't even enjoy this, as I said. It's just, I'm grappling with this. Vince Carter. Tell.
We'll get through it today as we go through the show. We got till 9 o'clock to help you get through it.
We do. Vince Carter's another one for Raptors fans.
Weird, right? There was so much vitriol at times. Now it feels like it's just kind of petered out, and it's like, okay, it's fine.
Those first games when he came back, not even the first ones, it was every single time when he came back with the Nets.
Wearing those red jerseys when the Raptors had a red out. Great planning, guys.
remember when Vince Carter had that like reverse dunk and he just like the most smug look.
He looked like Dave Chappelle in the Prince sketch descending from the basketball.
Only one person in history has fallen from the basket with the most smug manner possible. And it was that moment with Vince Carter hanging off the rim and smiling. And of course, several first round jokes, first rounds from Pat and Tottenham in the text line. Those have been historically problematic.
Yeah. Not fun. I have attended one, at least, actually the only Raptors playoff game I've ever attended was a game one loss against the Bucks in 2017. So that feels pretty fitting. It feels like I've really, really checked that one off the old, like, Raptors checklist. Saw them lose the first game of a playoff series. And hey, at least it's only the first game for them. Jokes about the Leafs, they all write themselves.
Now, while we're going to have Charles Davis on in a second here, but while we wait for him, we talked about it a little bit with Tom Brady off the opening block. Your relationship with him, moving on to Tampa Bay.
Literally framed picture in my basement.
Framed picture in the basement. So it means something. It's got to be somewhat conflicting. And as we go through this last chapter here, I'm at the point, as I mentioned, where I can't help but feel for him just a little bit. I don't know if it's like the personal stuff coloring this a little bit.
I think it's for a lot of people, yeah.
But I didn't necessarily need to see this chapter. And we talked about this with Charles Davis, who joins us now, last time. And the story just gets a little bit more, it gets it a little deeper. I think we understand it more. It's laid out again for us to see with Tom Brady. Charles, are you having the same difficulty now watching another week of Tom Brady struggle? First, the Panthers last week, now losing to the Ravens on Thursday night. It seems like the Bucs have reached a territory where they cannot recover from.
Yeah, I'm still not there where they can't recover because of their division. I mean, if the goal is to get to the playoffs, which it always is, duh, the division is going to keep them in it. Because let's be honest about it. The Panthers beating the Buccaneers, major surprise, but they're still 2-5. Okay? Atlanta being Atlanta, it was a controversial call that the Bucs got away with and won. Remember the late sack that wasn't a personal foul that got them?
Mm-hmm.
But yet at the same time, Atlanta hasn't exactly elevated since then. They got beat last week in Cincinnati. So the division will keep them in, and that's one of the reasons that we sit there and really hesitate about, shoveling the dirt on the grave of the Buccaneers. The second thing is, and really it's probably the first, it is really, really hard to get off the idea that a Tom Brady-led team is just going to collapse. because remember his first year in Tampa? You remember that game in Chicago on a Thursday night? Interestingly enough, where they just looked bad, and mm-hmm. Tom Brady didn't know that it was fourth down and looked confused, and we were all wondering. I mean, they were only 7-5 before they made their final run and then led themselves to a Super Bowl. So I'm not about to go there, but they have injuries piling up. Shaq Barrett's injury sounds like it's a season ender. Sounds like it's an Achilles, and he's one of their better pass rushers, obviously one of the better ones in the league. They look, and I said this before the game, they look weary. And weary not necessarily because they've run too many sprints in practice, but I think weary of everything that's gone into what this season has been about, starting with the offseason. Tom Brady retires, Tom Brady unretires. Tom Brady comes to camp, Tom Brady leaves camp. Well, that's one person, and every part of it is a legit deal. That's the one thing I want to make sure I'm very clear on. It's legit that you think you want to retire, and it's legit that you think, well, maybe I don't want to retire. He's not the first to have done that. Mm-hmm. And he won't be the last. witness any great boxer. If they don't retire and unretire 15 times, they're not a great boxer. Okay, that's just how it works. But the next part is him leaving during camp for personal reasons. He's not the first to have done that. He won't be the last. Maybe he's the most high profile though, because he's Tom Brady. That's pretty legit. And of course, it's too salacious for what is rumored for why he is leaving. Meaning. Personal stuff, family stuff, et cetera, which, as I've said, told you guys before, I try my best not to do domestic. That mm-hmm. this is not my thing. But it'd be disingenuous for me to act like that's not what's being discussed out there. Okay, well, that's been a part of it. But he leaves for his own personal reasons. He's gone. Again, legit. And any of us in a position where we need personal stuff taken care of, we would hope that our team and our company and our people would work with us. But here's where it all starts to become the reason I say weary. He's not around to answer the questions all the time. He's gone for that time frame. He comes back. He has one press conference, et cetera. Who has to answer all the questions? Everyone remaining. When you and I go into the locker room, so what's it like with Tom not here? How's it going? Does anyone talk to Tom? Anybody? The first day or two, yeah. When it's day after day after day, you start losing games. All of a sudden, he's at a wedding and he missed a walkthrough. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
It gets to be a weary thing it gets to be a thing that wears on everyone else. And that's where I think that when I watch the Buccaneers play, I don't see that pure joy right now. I see a team that looks tired. And as I said before, it's not because they're overtraining. I just think that all the stuff right now is heaped on top of them. And let's see if they get a chance to breathe and come out the other side. Now, I have predicted that. Now, whether I'm right or wrong or not, we shall see. What I mean by predicted that, meaning I said weeks ago, I thought the last half of the season would be better for the Bucs than the first half because I thought they would pass through all of this. I don't know that my prediction is going to be correct right now. So we'll see.
It may be true that this isn't a lost cause at this point, but it feels like, you know, maybe the Band-Aid should be ripped off as quickly as possible, which might be, hey, let's take a step back. Let's not do this anymore. But I think the division is what's going to ensure that it gets ripped off very, very slowly because there is still a chance, right? It's still there. I guess, you know, if the opportunity is still there, the chance is still there. What needs to change from a football perspective? Like, what is clearly not working on the field that can potentially be rescued here with Tom Brady and the way that this offense is functioning? Because the defense is a separate thing. It's got its issues. You mentioned the injury that they just suffered. Like, there's clearly issues all over the place. But what can Tom control that can help this team recover from, you know, the pit that they're in right now?
Well, that's a terrific question because I think what he can control, he can't. And that's the problem. See, he can control that he's going to show up every day and give all of himself towards the Buccaneers, which is what he has always done. I don't think there's been any loss of that. You know, everybody wants to talk about him distracted and he's this. And I don't think that's really what it is. I think when he gets to that facility, He's all in. But real does creep in on everything, okay? Real life does take its toll on you in terms of that, where if everything else is in imbalance, it doesn't work. There's a movie that I saw a while ago that they use real Navy SEALs in it. I think it's called Act of Valor. And they ended up getting an assignment where they had to go and rescue someone, all right? And they had this gathering with their families on the beach, et cetera, et cetera. And then all the guys who were going to go left the families at their function, gathered together, and talked. And it was like their last night, we're all going to be able to sit and have fun before we go off on this next mission. My point of it was, when they went off on their own, their leader in the group said, make sure everything here is okay before you go. Make sure everything here is fine before you go. Meaning, everything better be in balance back here so you're not distracted out there.
Yeah.
And Act of Valor does not come into football, and we're always very fond of saying war and sports are not the same at whatever, and I understand that, and I'm not trying to bring that into it. But life, if your life in one place isn't quite right, can your life in your business world be okay totally?
No.
It's hard. It's very, very difficult. So that's part of what's going on there. And it's not just him, and that's the thing I want to keep pointing out. Do we really think that Tom Brady is the only one going through personal things that's playing NFL football this fall?
Not a
really?
Chance. Yeah.
He's the only one dealing with anything at home? He's it? We're acting like everyone else in the league is fine. Yeah, we're good. Tom Brady's the only one going through stuff. Come on, stop it. It's like that everywhere. He's the most high profile. Obviously, because he's Tom Brady. But you think he's the only one who's dealing with the idea of whether or not my life in this area is going to remain the same as it's been? No. Everybody's going through that type of a thing. So it's a lot of those things. So to get it back in balance, yeah, all that's one thing. The other part simply is, you know, Cameron Brate, their tight end, has been out, and he's been a big part of what they do offensively because he filled, you know, Gronk was it there before as a red zone guy. Cameron Brate's a good player that way. Godwin had come back from injury, got hurt again, came back again. Mike Evans has been battling some stuff on the outside. You know, running game is this. New coaching staff in terms of everyone getting settled in their roles. I did not enjoy watching Todd Bowles' press conference last night. And let me tell you why. Because the week before, someone had asked him, hey, Todd, you know, things aren't going well. Would you consider any changes to your coaching staff? He just looked at him like, are you kidding me? And flat out said no. 1 week later, everything's on the table. What? 1 week?
It's a quick
turnaround.
1 week
now, I'm going to evaluate my coaching staff? I did not like that. And I'm going to tell you why. That's the thing that if you're thinking it, don't put it out there. Don't put it out there at all for anyone. We don't need to know that you're thinking about issues with your coaching staff. Because all that means is we, and I'm talking about we media types, oh, well, we got a response before. You think I'm not going to ask it again? And every day until I see one coaching change, until I see a head roll on a platter, don't do that to your coaching staff. I thought that was a bad move for Todd.
Yeah, especially in a scenario where there's just so much noise, right? Like, people are searching for answers about
too much noise. You just added to it.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
You're exactly right. You just nailed it. You just amplified the noise. You just took the noise of it. It's like being in an arena, and you know how they ask you to cheer, and then they throw the decibel sign up there and say, beat this decibel sign. They just took the noise up to a level they didn't need to take it. And I just thought that was a bad move on his part. Because he just didn't need to say it. You know, like my old coach Johnny Majors told us in college all the time at Tennessee, one of his great quotes was always, guys, I never want you to lie to anyone. I always want you to, you know, be truthful with people. But you don't always have to tell everybody everything you know.
Yeah, omission isn't necessarily lying. Fan Morning Show, Brett Gutting, Justin Cuthbert, talking to Charles Davis here. I do want to look ahead to the game you've got this week, including Brady's former team. You know, the Jets, they've been off to a really hot start to begin the year, but they get dealt that big blow with the Breece Hall injury. What does it do to a team in a position like the Jets? You know, I'm not going to go as far as to say it's found money or they didn't expect themselves to be there, but I think they probably have one or two more wins on the season than they would have expected, and all of a sudden they get dealt this big injury blow. What does it do to a team, and how hard is it to kind of change gears? You know, I know the NFL is all about next man up, and every team has to deal with injuries, but when it's just going so right for a group like the Jets, how hard is it to not let this be a setback?
I think what you said early, and it was spot on. It's not found money or anything, but I do think that they had hoped for these wins. But I don't think that the team and the franchise was in a position that they were expected yet. I think you're spot on about that. But now that they do have them, the beauty of this team, in my mind, is that they are so young that every day is like going to FAO Schwartz. Okay, every day is a toy store. Let's go. This is cool. Let's have it. And I'm not saying it like they're immature, but it is just so much fun. This rookie class is so tight-knit and bonded that the Breece Hall injury kills them. But at the same time, they're young enough that nothing is devastating. Every day is just simply, let's go out and have a blast. And we're just doing our thing. We're balling. You know, I think one of the rookies, and I forgot who it was, someone had asked about the class and the team and all that, and the guy just looked at the person that asked the question and said, bro, we're really good. I mean, and that's how they feel about themselves, and as well as they should. The team has reacted appropriately. Everyone hates the fact Breece Hall is hurt, but how did the team react? General Manager Joe Douglas went out and swung the deal right away for essentially a Breece Hall clone. And James Robinson from Jacksonville, who was not being used very much. And when I say clone, body type, height, weight, not speed. Breece Hall's faster, all right? But same type of a player. Slashing type of a back, high-volume ball carrier, catch the ball out of the backfield, heavy production in college that translated to the NFL. Breece Hall was a second-rounder. James Robinson was undrafted because he played one double-A, played at Illinois State. If James Hall done the same thing in Illinois, I mean, not James Hall, but James Robinson does the same thing in Illinois, he's going to go in the second round, too. So that's what we're talking about, just where he went. And then people wanted to question his speed, 4.64 coming out. Just throw that out the window. He's fine. Now he gets a chance to come to a team like this that's excited about playing, hates the fact that their brother is down. But you know something? Let's go play again. It's another day. Here we go. I don't think it affects them that way. I don't think that it stalls them where they look in the locker room and there's just such a ball cast that they can't play. Young teams like this tend to keep going. They tend to just keep going and having a blast at what they're doing. I think the Jets are going to be no different that way. They will continue to play with the same type of excitement and verve, even though they lost a key component in Breece Hall.
Unfortunately for the Cincinnati Bengals, there are no Ja'Marr Chase clones, or very few of them at least.
Cost a lot to get one.
Yeah, none of them would be available through trade. Yeah. That's a devastating blow to Cincinnati, I think 4 to 6 weeks with a hip injury. How much does the Bengals offense hinge on Chase's presence, and even if it's just the threat of Ja'Marr Chase? Like, how much easier will it be to play against Cincinnati without that connection there for Joe Burrow?
Not as easy as one would think with a player like Chase, because you talk about a bounty of riches at wide receiver for Cincinnati. T. Higgins was a 1,000-yard receiver last year with Ja'Marr Chase. Tyler Boyd had been a 1,000-yard receiver prior to Chase's coming on the scene. He got kicked down the scene a little bit. Yeah, he was still almost 900 yards last year and didn't have a drop until, unfortunately, the Super Bowl. So these are guys who are used to being leading people, who have taken a secondary role because of Chase's talents. They can elevate again and move back up. That part helps them. The second thing is now you can bring Joe Mixon back into the scene a little bit more, the running back, not just as a runner, but also as a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. So they have people who can jump in and fill in. Do you fill in totally like a Ja'Marr Chase? No. That would be stupid of me to say, because Ja'Marr Chase is, as you guys have pointed out, one of the better, most exciting wide receivers in the league. And, you know, you're right, even though trades are available. Yeah, if a guy's available, is he going to be Ja'Marr Chase? No. I mean, it just makes common sense, right? You don't find Ja'Marr Chase clone available in trading, because if you have a Ja'Marr Chase, you don't get rid of him. You keep him. You play from there. But Cincinnati is built a little bit better to withstand this. 4 to 6 weeks. they should be able to withstand all of that comes at them, still be in the playoff race, and get him back for the stretch run. They are fortunate. Most teams have Ja'Marr Chase and no one else like him. Cincinnati has Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, Joe Mixon. You know, they picked up Hayden Hurst's tight end in the offseason. They have ways to go ahead and continue to play, albeit without the extreme explosiveness that Chase gives them.
It may be a little too early in the morning for this question, Charles, but I want to ask you anyway.
Great start.
What's more likely?
You know, I love that you plowed right through. I love the fact that you will not be deterred, even though you've acknowledged it might be too early to do this. But at the same time, I don't care.
Yeah, I refuse to let you have a say in whether or not this will be asked. What do you think's more likely? 6,000 passing yards for Josh Allen. The record is 5,400, but you know, 17 game schedule, and yep, he's on pace for almost 6,000 right now, or 2,000 receiving yards for Tyreek Hill. The record is 1,964. Of course, there's 17 games, and Hill's on pace for that as well. What do you think is more likely here? Although both of them, you know, they would have to have ridiculous, outstanding, beyond measure seasons for either of them to get to that point.
Way too early in the morning for a question. I like it. I do like the question, because we are always wondering just what limits we're going to push things to, you know, and as you pointed out, there is a 17 game schedule, and we're not doing what baseball did way back in the day when Roger Maris was going to break Babe Ruth's record and they put the asterisk in. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the length of the schedule, 154 to 162. I think it's more likely for Hill. Mm. And here's why. Because Miami is in a position at 4-3 of doing all the chasing and having to run people down. And I think that Tua being back, what's his number one thing? They're going to throw the football, and he's going to find Tyreek Hill somehow, some way. Not that he doesn't have other options. Jalen Waddle's a pretty good option. Mike Gesicki's another option. But just the way that they run offense, I think the opportunities are there, plus the explosiveness of Tyreek Hill, where we always know the 5-yard pass can turn into a 55-yard play. And by the way, you get all the credit for that on your score sheet. Not that Josh Allen doesn't have potential to approach 6,000 yards. Look at the receiving core he has. Look at the way that they throw the football. Look how they run offense. I will tell you, in the preseason, I would have thought Buffalo would run offense a little bit differently this year. With Brian Daboll in New York and Sean McDermott as a defensive head coach. But I thought they would draft a big back. They didn't, you know, meaning guy that they would need for December, January, more of a thumper. They didn't do that. I thought they would run it more. They haven't done that. So that means things still really reside on the shoulders totally of Josh Allen, and why not? He's one of the best in the game. But I just think that you know, if you're asking me which one to pick, I'm going with the Tyreek Hill one, just because I think he's going to be the guy that gets the ball fed to him just a little bit more. And then has that opportunity to make those types of plays. Because Mike McDaniel, let's face it, he's going to call all these swings and wide receiver screens and other things. And then, of course, the big shots downfield. So way too early in the morning for a question like that. But you know something? If you ask it, I'm going to do my best to answer it. Because I'm not shying away. I'm not saying that's the end of this press conference. I'm not walking off the podium. I'm trying to be there for you to ask these types of questions. And then I'm going to call my agent when I get off of here and say, I'm never doing this again because they ask questions too early in the morning.
Listen, Charles, it may be too early, but I think you provided the right answer, which is unsurprising. But here's my hope. I hope that, you know, you said that Tua and Tyreek have to really press for it. They have to be probably throwing the ball and slinging it until week 17. My hope is that Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs keep the pressure on the Buffalo Bills, and that he might not be 6,000 yards, but Josh Allen sets a record anyway, because I do think 5,400 is definitely worth or within his capabilities this year.
No question. I think that you are spot on about that. I think at this stage of his career, what we've seen from Josh Allen, when it's all said and done and we write the history of Josh Allen, if it continues on the trajectory that we're on right now, it is going to be one incredible story, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be, and the numbers will be a part of it, although football numbers aren't like baseball, where baseball is ruled by numbers. football numbers are more of an accessory to go along to burnish the legend of what we saw and watched, observed. Watching Josh Allen go from what we predicted, when I say we, consensus of him coming out of Wyoming, beautiful looking quarterback, best arm in the draft, but accuracy, how many times did you hear that? He was only a 54% thrower, 55% thrower in Wyoming. You don't typically get better in the NFL, blah, 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 blah. He's blown everything out of the water. I mean, everything. He has made us reevaluate. I sat on a committee the other day, a group of big-time NFL people, and that was one of the subjects. Evaluating quarterbacks now, we look at them differently and evaluate differently because of Josh Allen. Josh Allen has taken the old, whatever you were in college, accuracy and percentage-wise, you'll be essentially that in the NFL, give or take a few points. Josh Allen blew that so far out of the water that we have to look at quarterbacks differently now. And that was a discussion point. And I'm talking, you got to understand, the people I was talking to, not to make me sound like I'm Mr. Big Time.
On a committee, sounding pretty big time, Charles.
Well, when I say committee is really not the right word, but it's a group of NFL people. Mm. And in this group, former head coaches, former quarterback gurus, former GMs. And in that grouping of people, there were Super Bowl rings of every one of those stripes. So I'm talking about people who have done it at the highest level and evaluated it. And all of them said, Josh Allen has made me go back down. When I watch these college quarterbacks, think to myself, is there a possibility that what I'm seeing can elevate as opposed to what I'm seeing is what I get, which is how we evaluated all of them prior to. He's changed the whole dynamic.
Charles Davis will be on the call for Patriots and Jets this Sunday at MetLife Stadium, and hopefully he will be back with us Friday if his agent doesn't have something to do with it. Charles, thanks again for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it very much. And, who was he who sang early in the morning? Gap Band? He had a Gap Band early in the morning. So we'll have to evaluate that part of it, but other than that, we're good.
All right, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, you guys take care. Have a great week.
You too. That was Charles Davis, and that was our Insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. We do quickly have to have something to chew on here. We skip the A-list, but we don't skip something to chew on. And I think we got a good one here. Yesterday, it was reported by the Houston Chronicle about a proposed trade in 2018 at the 2018 trade deadline in Major League Baseball, apparently agreed in principle. Washington Nationals and Houston Astros agreed to trade or exchange Bryce Harper for five prospects, none of whom have really amounted to anything. Abraham Toro, Randy Cesar, Josh James, J.B. Bukauskas, no relation to Kyle, at least I don't think. And Kent Emanuel.
He has great hair.
Yeah, no problem there. Instead, the Nationals held on to Harper, did not trade him to the Astros in 2018, and they just lost him in free agency. What do you make of it? Like, is there a butterfly effect here? Like, what happens to the Astros? What happens to the Nationals? I guess nothing, because they lost him anyway, and these prospects didn't amount to nothing. Does the butterfly effect strongest with the Philadelphia Phillies? I guess he could have gone there anyway, but if this trade did go through, how do you think history would be different?
I think it's with the Astros. I mean, Bryce Harper, if we know nothing else about him, a really, really vocal personality, is going to be at the center of every room he's in. And, you know, I'm not saying he's not this either, but it's like, not to say he's some great man of virtue who would have been like, no, 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 there'll be no trash cans on my watch. But you throw a personality like that into a team and, you know, it's baseball. There is no chemistry. They don't have to play off of each other. So in theory, it only makes them better. But I mean, I don't know that it's a certainty that they go on to win the title, even though they're getting a vastly better player in Bryce Harper than any of those prospects have turned out to be. So it is with the Phillies, because he probably doesn't end up there. But I also think it's a bit with the Astros. Like, do we have, and again, there's no way to ever know this. Mm-hmm. Do we have the sign stealing scandal if Bryce Harper's there? probably, I think, because it was probably already entrenched before he got there. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Bryce Harper is seen as like, because let's be honest, if he was there, he would have been like the vocal villain in all this just because of the personality he has. So I think it's like the worst for Harper if that would have happened somehow. Interesting, interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the legacy could have been different, but he can handle his own legacy this year.
That's exactly
if the Philadelphia Phillies win the World Series. That, by the way, was something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, 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 yum. That's me. That's me.
Whoa.
People are in the text line going to be upset, though.
Oh, Josh was sitting on that.
Yum, yum, yum.
There, that's fantastic.
There. Thank you. Yeah, they
okay.
need that.
Okay, now that we've got both drops, we can move on.
Scared the bejesus out of me the first time I heard that one when I was filling in. I got to say, I was used to it now, but first time, whew.
It takes a little while, I think, to get over. I think Ailish is fine with her drop by this point, but I feel like it was the same thing. Saying yum, 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 I just did it.
There you go.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Flip.
We'll see if that comes up later. But after the break, would you rather Daniele joins us to send us some hypotheticals? And we navigate that. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet, 590 The Fan, Cuthbert and Gunner.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show. Justin Cuthbert and Brent Gunning filling in for Ailish Forfar, who's returned to her alma mater for the weekend. I'm sure
doesn't she have two alma maters? How
she
fancy!
Does.
I don't. I like barely have one. Shout out Humber College.
Yeah,
and barely. Yeah. I know no one cares, but we're here. Had graduated from radio broadcasting at Humber, and they were like, "Hey, bud, you're short an elective," and I'm like, "This cannot be happening." And luckily, had one from my quick dalliance at the University of Windsor that could somehow get carried over, save the day, official graduate of Humber College. So now, there we go.
Thank you. Now we did nightmares before. My enduring nightmare, we were joking around. Yeah, maybe we'll think about these sports ones. Yeah. But my real enduring
one of us was. The other one gets woken up in a cold sweat every night.
My real enduring deep in the subconscious nightmare is from university when I completely forgot having a paper that was due.
Oh no.
And I came up with an excuse. I'll be like, "Hey, I think I was just honest. I was like, I completely forgot. Can I give it to you tomorrow?" They let me. But that moment where I had to come clean, tail set firmly between my legs, I still have that moment come up like once a year in a dream. And it's just like the worst.
Yeah,
it is the
terrible.
Absolute worst. I don't know why. It's like something that takes a permanent residency in your brain and you'll never, ever be able to let it go. And that's the one for
We're telling quick tales now. You had a very different tact than a roommate of mine in college. Shout out Patrick Tufts if you're out there listening. So we had a strike. So a lot of exam dates got moved and he just missed an exam. And I remember walking in, he was on the phone with his parents. He's like, "Dad, it's hilarious. You're never going to believe what happened." And it's like, let me tell you, Dad did not think it was hilarious that he missed the exam. So good for you rectifying the situation. I don't know what happened to Buddy in that particular exam, but I don't think quite as well as you.
It wasn't an exam, but it was an intramural final, I believe, at playing hockey at university. And we thought it was a 12 noon final.
Oh, no.
And it was a 12 a.m. And that was very, very devastating in the moment. We need your wake and rake submissions. But quickly, before we get to Would You Rather, and Daniele is going to jump on with us to present the Would You Rathers. Just a note out of San Jose, this from Curtis Pashelka, who's been covering the Sharks for a long time, been on that beat for a long, long time. So definitely, not that this is like hard hitting in any way, but he reports that the Hall & Oates song that the Leafs play, of course, after every goal, was being blared in the Sharks dressing room after the 4-3 defeat in San Jose last night. Now, that's not reason to change the song.
I disagree.
But another example of teams relishing beating the Maple Leafs and enjoying themselves afterwards.
No, I disagree. It is absolutely reason to change the song. I am not even a change the song guy, but it is time. If other teams are using it to mock you now, especially a team like the Sharks, like, come on, what are we doing here? Got to change it. Justin Bieber's like best friends with two-thirds of the top line. Get him in the lab. Cook something up. It can't be that hard. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a musician. Maybe it is hard. I don't know, but figure it out. Somebody create a new goal song or something, because we can't have this go on any longer.
Yeah, it shouldn't be hard for Biebs to produce something. And I know we were big Stratford talk, big Southwestern Ontario talk yesterday. Biebs can climb up the Southwestern Ontario rankings if he fixes the goal song conundrum and stops teams like the San Jose Sharks from dunking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Daniele, it's time for Would You Rather. You ready to float some hypotheticals our way?
Absolutely. Week number two of Would You Rather, and so that's a good sign. We made it to week two. Gunner, you get to witness week two of Would You Rather.
Fired up.
All right. I'm going to start off with this one because Justin was brought it up and was like, hey, you didn't mention this one last week. You had it in there, didn't use it. And so we'll start with this question. Would you rather see the Leafs win, finally, that elusive first-round playoff series, or the Blue Jays trade for one Shohei Ohtani?
You don't want to know the things in this city I would list to see the Leafs win a playoff round, okay?
Just one.
Yeah, just one, man.
Like, I'm half joking, but not. Contraction for other franchises might be on the table, especially you, TFC. I would sacrifice you in an instant to let this team win a round. As far as the Blue Jays, yeah. I said it, and guess what? I mean it. I know the Italians are going to come for me, both in terms of Daniele's brethren and the two Italians that we just brought into TFC. I know they're coming for me. I don't care. There is nothing in this city, sports-wise, I would not give up to see the Leafs win a round. I know this is like a curse monkey's paw scenario, and if the finger just went down and something terrible is going to happen, you can all blame me for it. There's nothing I wouldn't give up to see the Leafs win just one round.
Here's one thing I would take over the local hockey team winning one single round. Maybe the greatest baseball player ever.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I'm not going to quibble.
I think I would take Shohei Ohtani over one series victory. Stanley Cup, maybe a different story, but he not only is the GOAT right now, he's a lefty slugger and a potentially dominant starting pitcher. Two areas of need for the Toronto Blue Jays, and Ohtani, Manoah, Gausman starting three would be fantastic. And of course, we get someone who can diversify the offense. So give me Shohei Ohtani.
Hear me out, though. The Leafs win around. Like, on all that said, on the other side of the equation, Michael Bunting tips home a puck in a game seven, and the Leafs actually win around. Yeah, pretty good. All right, what do we
it's
got
like
next?
Winning. Is that their Super Bowl? That's their Stanley Cup.
That's it, baby. Bunts tipping one home.
And Bunting the hero.
It has to be. Oh, I'm so getting good. Greedy.
That's so good. Okay, in the Halloween sphere, there's going to be a lot of young kids out there. A lot of Torontonians are going to want to dress up as some athletes from our wonderful city here. Mm. So I have a question for you. And we got a lot of guys who are incredibly fashionable out there. Good hair. So whose flow would you rather have if you had a choice? Mr. Austin Matthews or one Bo Bichette?
I don't want to be too mean at 7:43 in the morning, especially after a guy lost a hockey game. This is a no-brainer. Says Bo Bichette in a heartbeat. If I work a ton of Jays games. They got the Bo flow on the Jumbotron with the guy. It is Bo Bichette in a heartbeat. It is not even close. And that is all I will have to say about number 34's hairline on the show today.
Well, here's the secret. Here's something that people are not talking about enough here. These guys are both play bald candidates. Both of them are play bald candidates. One of them is showing it. The other one, we've seen Dante Bichette hanging out in the dugout.
This is true.
The man is bald.
This is true.
Bo Bichette might have bald in his future, but right now,
get your follicles from your father, I've heard. Yeah.
Right now, he's not the one showing vulnerability. That person is Austin Matthews. For that reason, I'll take Bo right now. But I don't think he's going to be rocking this forever. I think there's a timeline. Time is fleeting here on that hairstyle. But of course, it's Bo right now.
Now, if we get the mustache, you could maybe talk me into Matthews. But I already got that. I'm already rocking that. And I was doing it before him. And I'm going to say that till I'm blue in the face. Everyone thinks, oh, you got it because you love Matthews. No, I've had this for a decade. Okay, there you go. What do we got?
And with Bo, the one thing is, well, we don't always get to see what's under the headband.
That's a great point.
So we don't know.
Yeah, it could be crawling falls. Back too. It could be crawling.
Right? Might be pulling the old LeBron year after year. It gets a little bit higher, right? It gets a little bit higher. we'll go with the Raptors one here. Taking all factors into consideration, would you rather have the Sixers duo of Joel Embiid, James Harden, or the Raptors tandem of Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes?
Short and sweet, and it was similar to an answer I gave last week. Which one's letting you down? Which one's going to make you feel good, your heart warm, more often than not? You might not have a championship in your future, but guess what? You don't either with Joel Embiid and James Harden. So I'm going to take the two that don't routinely frustrate me, take the two that make me feel good more often than not, and that, of course, is Siakam and Barnes. More to be excited about. Easy one.
That's exactly where I'm at. It's a great duo in terms of what Philly can give you. James Harden is frustrating a player as there is to root for, and Joel Embiid, I like owning him as opposed to having to root for him, which is what this franchise has done. So yeah, give me Siakam, give me Barnes, and I think Barnes, there is a world where he is in the stratosphere that those other two guys have reached. So you take the future picks there. I like it.
I'm with you, and I think that's incredibly fascinating for this reason. Joel Embiid and James Harden are objectively better players right now
1,000%
than Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes. But even today, if I had to pick, I would still pick those other two.
There
even
we
if we were going to play a game right now, 15 minutes down at the park, and we need to get a group together, I would prefer those two over Harden.
And you're the coach, so we got to listen.
I think it's interesting. Okay, excellent. Let's go with let's do a Halloween themed one.
Mm.
Okay, I think I know which way you might lean here, Gunnar, because you kind of alluded to it. But would you rather watch a horror movie, a scary movie, or have to walk through a haunted house?
Okay, so I'm gonna plead and beg for door C, cry in the fetal position until it's all over, but I've been told that's not available to me. I'd rather watch a scary movie because I can like dick around on my phone and zone out. I'm in the haunted house. What am I going to do?
Yeah,
be like,
yeah,
oh, there's not a ghoul right in front of me with a chainsaw that's going to get me or whatever. No, I got to go scary movie and just not engage with it at all. Just like, oh, another interesting tweet. Better really dive into this. So that's what I go. But I really want Dorsey fetal position crying on the floor till it's all over.
Give me the haunted house. But as long as there's someone who's going to be more scared than I am, like me and you could go.
Okay.
I'm okay with that because I could be laughing at you to just sort of deflect my own fear.
I'm just crying.
Yeah. Someone else is dealing with it worse than me. That's all I really need. I'll take the house, something more entertaining and probably less.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
We get it over with right there.
That's
like
a good
Tom Brady.
I'm not going to be
remove the Band-Aid.
I'm not going to be in the house for an hour and a half.
You're locked in your two-hour movie. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing. The thing you got to factor in is you go, what is it, 10, 15 minutes, whatever the case may be, and then you're finished and you're out.
Mm.
So that's
I might die of a heart attack finished, but there you go.
Yeah, no, but yeah, your argument was actually good. I did not think you were going to go that way, by the way. So I think that's a good one.
Playing chess here, okay? Checkers.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Okay. There's a certain coach that's been making headlines this week. We've talked a lot about him on this show here and there. He's been all around in the hockey universe. His name has been out there. As of today, would you rather have Sheldon Keefe or Barry Trotz as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
All right. This might be the wrong answer, but I'm going Sheldon Keefe. I don't consider him either issue one or two or three or four, honestly. I don't think he's the problem. I don't think he's the reason why this team is failing right now. I actually believe pretty strongly in his coaching ability, and I think he'd be better if he could be his true self, which is someone who's able to say what he wants when he wants. But I think the issue is with Trotz and maybe the compatibility thing. Like, they're geared towards being this high possession, high event team that is going to outscore the opposition. And Barry Trotz wants to dumb things down. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't put him in a corner, but I have a very distinct, another haunting memory. When I was covering the Toronto Maple Leafs, I was headed to the New York Islanders dressing room one night to talk, I believe, to Anthony Beauvillier, and they had shut down the Leafs, another embarrassing night where they couldn't get their offense going, and Barry Trotz emerged and snickered to himself. We really shut that one down, didn't we? Laughing at the fact that he made sure that a Hockey Night in Canada game, 7 p.m. on a Saturday night, was as boring as possible. And I just don't necessarily want to see that. I want to see a good team like the Colorado Avalanche do great things. I don't necessarily want to see a ceiling like the New York Islanders had, which is conference finals, although I think you'd take that, Gunner.
Yeah, I would gladly take the conference finals. We just talked about what I would do just to see them win four games in a seven-game span, let alone many more than that. I'm with you. You got to keep Keefe, especially with Trotz as the other option there. The one pushback I'd have to that or thing I would say is we are approaching the point in the season where you cannot continue to just go through the motions, and it is what it is. And I'm not saying Keefe is going through the motions, but the team, it clearly looks like that at times, and we've said it a million times. You're not trading all the players. Matthews isn't going anywhere. Marner's not going anywhere. Tavares isn't going anywhere. Nylander's not going anywhere. The only way you can wake this group up now, Jake Muzzin on LTIR, maybe that changes things and you can do the big trade to wake yourself up, but it feels like a coaching change could be coming if it continues this way.
I just feel like Kyle Dubas doesn't have that move given where he's at. But I also one other thing to consider is if we don't think the team is responding well to Keefe, why would they respond well to Barry Trotz, who wants to, again, suck the life out of things a little bit? I just don't see that working as well as people think it would in their head.
Well, and I think the other thing is people have this notion, and I think it's gone away a little bit, but I still think there's a faction of people that think of Keefe as like, hey, let's all get the dance music going. Everybody happy. No. This is a drill sergeant guy who wants to have things run a very particular way. So it's not like you're doing the move to say, all right, let's get a military style guy in here and really shake up the vibes. No, I think the vibes are already quite a lot like that. And with the way this team's going, you're not going to go even more in the direction of let the horses out of the barn and see what happens. So I don't think a coaching change should happen. I just wonder if it continues this way, are you really just going to let the season kind of slowly slip away from you?
If Trotz's powers, though, are that everyone, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're Alexander Ovechkin or Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, you will listen.
Could help.
If you can guarantee that, then you might make that move.
Maybe.
It's an interesting question to ponder, especially if they're in this kind of, I don't know, this barren wasteland of sitting there in 500 hockey, whatever. Like you said, Gunnar, eventually we might have to start asking that question. Okay, a little bit of a fun one. Would you rather sit courtside at a Raptors game with the wonderful superfan Nav Bhatia, or sit directly behind home plate at a Jays game with the lovely Blue Jays Nonna?
Okay, so Nav Bhatia, easy answer here. It's courtside in an NBA game. He's friends with all the star players. This is the easy answer. But I am going to go with the Nona for a couple of reasons. One, I was watching Jay's batting practice this year, and she gets shepherded in via a golf cart to her seat, which would be a great move to have alongside you. And also, now, Daniela, you don't need this, but I do. Can you imagine the recipes you can get from her in a 3.5-hour baseball game? I'm not going to butcher all the names of the wonderful foods of your people, Daniele, but the recipe, I would walk out of there with a full cookbook by the time the game's done. I don't care about watching a lick of baseball, and it'd just be great to sit next to her. So Nav's the easy answer, but I could 1,000% talk myself in to the Nona.
Yeah, Daniele's pronunciation there of Nona was, first off, great. And I feel like if this is just hanging out, it's Nona 100%. It's 100% Nona. She is so badass. I want to learn from her. I think if you spent 5 minutes with her, you'd walk straight through that haunted house, no problem. I don't think you'd have fear anymore.
No. She's like, you put an onion in your sock, the fear goes away. And I'd be like, I knew it. I knew there was something.
And this isn't to slight Nav Bhatia. Great guy. I'd like to hang out with him too.
Met him before.
It would be cool to hang out with Nav Bhatia, and you've done it.
Got a pick maybe with him.
That's part of it.
There you go. Maybe that is it, actually. I just realized. But I just cracked the code.
You're right. The tiebreaker is sitting courtside versus sitting behind home plate.
Nav Bhatia's best friends with Shaq. It's nuts. He's just so beloved.
You tell way more stories if you hung out courtside with Nav Bhatia, so that's the pick.
Yeah.
There's a mystique to Blue Jays Nonna that Nav doesn't have, and it's because she doesn't talk to
them. I was going to say, are we sure she would talk to me if I sat next to her for a whole Jays game?
This is the thing. Now, hold on. This is the thing. This is kind of what sparked this question. I was thinking about it yesterday. Sid Sixero had the opportunity to do this, where out of the blue, at a Jays game and got summoned, essentially, saying, Blue Jays Nona has requested that you sit next to her.
Come kiss the ring.
Okay? She refuses to do any media. She has no interest in speaking to anybody.
I love it.
So any story that she would have, would only be divulged if you had the opportunity to sit next to her.
That's really good.
Whereas Nav is out there. We could call Nav up now. He'd come on and be
very true.
You know, he'd be waxing poetic. He could tell you everybody he met. Rhyme
you know what?
Up.
Either way, I'm Nona now.
All right.
It's an interesting.
You swayed me.
Good. But I found that really interesting.
Best question
of the day. Sid really swayed me and thought, oh, that's really cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll move on to the next one here. Stick with the Blue Jays one, actually. If you had the opportunity to only make one move this offseason, would you rather see the Jays add a quality starting pitcher or that much-needed, elusive left-handed bat?
Quality starting pitcher. We saw what the rotation was at points in time this year. We saw what Barrios was. Not to say you can't count on him to be a part of the rotation. I don't think you can count on him to be your third guy if you think you're a World Series team. I think if you have a third frontline quality guy, it just changes the entire complexion of what you need out of your bullpen as well. Takes a little pressure off Gausman, takes a little pressure off Manoah, and you need horses who can pitch to win you a World Series. So I go pitcher.
Give me the bat. There's a non-zero chance that Barrios gets back to what we expected from him. And I don't think there's any chance that the Blue Jays could possibly win a World Series without making things more difficult on opposing starting pitching. Like, if they just get to cruise every single time they're out there and not have to change from batter to batter, then you put yourself in a position where you're never going to win. So give me the bat. Let's fix the rotation and let's keep our fingers crossed that Jose Barrios or someone else can be that third starter, because you got two of them already.
Josh was going to accuse me of plagiarism, so I will give him credit on this.
Okay.
Okay, Josh is going to get credit for this.
Thank you.
I was in the camp of Justin, actually, but Josh made a good point. When the trade deadline rolls around, for example, it's easier to add the bat than it is to add the pitcher. It's harder sometimes to add the pitcher, integrate the pitcher, then there's tons of bats that are constantly out there that can make an impact.
The other thing as well is that it depends what we mean by quality or impact. Like, if you tell me I can have an ace pitcher or Juan Soto, I'm going to take Juan Soto.
100%.
But if it is a number three starter versus whatever the equivalent of that is as a left-handed bat, I think the starter is more impactful. So there you go.
Yeah, so that's a great point, because especially if you look at the market, for example, I'm going to throw Jacob DeGrom out there, but I don't think they're going to get a Jacob DeGrom. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about a DeGrom or a Verlander versus a Michael Brantley,
yeah,
there's no question who you're taking in that
scenario. Exactly.
Right? But okay, and we'll end on this. We'll end it with a Halloween fun one. I want you to do a I think I wrote down, because I put it in the doc, I put a surprise Halloween question.
I've been on the edge of my seat since I saw that.
All right, so here it is. I just got to pull it up. Give me one moment here. Okay, it's going to be a start bench cut scenario.
Okay.
Okay? You have to pick Halloween candies, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Kit Kat, okay, and Snickers. Start bench cut.
All right, so quick confession to make. As a guy with a nut allergy, I'm the worst Halloween person of all time.
Ooh.
So I'm going to bench them both and eat three Kit Kats because I'm a fatty. How about that?
this one's easy.
Yeah, you're cutting Kit Kat, aren't you?
No, I'm benching Kit Kat. I'm cutting Snickers, but Reese, anything Reese, pieces, cups, whatever it may be, that's always the number one Halloween candy. It will remain that way. It will always be starting. Give me three of those rather than the other ones. We can just, you know, if we got them in the middle of the table,
swap here.
We'll have zero problem.
There we go.
You and me, Gunner.
Beautiful.
Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen. I think that's great. I would go with that too. Can't go wrong with the Reese's. So I'm with you on that.
Alrighty. Another successful Would You Rather. After the break, we've got Mark Messier. Before we get to the break, though, send your Wake and Rake submissions in. Gunner and I have got to put it together. I'm turning things around slowly. 3-1 week. Let's make it 4-1, but let's actually win a Wake and Rake. So get your submissions in. And after the break, Fan Morning Show, it's Mark Messier.
Heard of him?
Talk about a captain. That's next.